Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a guest that hasn't been with us for a while, but he's one of my favorite people. I respect him highly. And with the climate that we're experiencing economically, it's a challenge. I'm not sure we have a lot that we can hold our, hang our hat on. You watch TV, they don't help you. Basically, if you're a small business owner, you're kind of out there on your own. So I wanted to have Mr. Kerry Lutz come back and speak with us. He's the founder of the Financial Survival Network, and he's a student of Austrian economics since 1977. He attended Pace University, and while there, he stumbled upon an extensive cache of Austrian economic literature in dark, musty, abandoned section of the school's library. He graduated from the New York Law School, and he became an attorney and lifelong serial entrepreneur. His diverse career has included running a legal printing company, practicing commercial law and litigation, and founding a successful distressed asset investment company. After the 2008 financial collapse and the continued global economic deterioration, he realized that people needed a reliable resource for accurate information. Believing that inflation would eventually run rampant, he dedicated himself to helping people protect and preserve their wealth. And that's one of the things that we're going to speak about today. And I'm really looking forward to picking his brain because as a small business owner, it's one of those things where you have to be nimble, think on your feet, and be adventurous and quite frankly, fearless. So, Kerry, I want to thank you so much for joining me today because our conversation, I think, with everything going on, is very timely.
Hey, well, it's always a pleasure to come on your show, Dr. George. I think you do amazing things, and I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Well, thank you so much. Now, let's talk about the overall economic situation that we find ourselves in. I know that the U.S. credit has recently been downgraded. How is that affecting us? If we're getting a rosy picture on one side telling us inflation is down and the jobs creation is up. But what does that main thing mean, a credit downgrade? How would that affect a business owner?
Well, it's just acknowledging what everybody knows already, and that is that the current course of the U.S. government, of its finances, of the country, is completely unsustainable. And so they can't come down and really downgrade the U.S., so you nick them a little bit and hope that they might wake up as a result of your warning, your admonition.
Does that mean that it costs more money to borrow? Is that making the
They manipulate the interest rates, so I don't know that it's really going to raise rates. And a while ago, I think it was Moody's, like 13, 14 years ago, while Obama was president, downgraded the U.S. to AA+. Mm-hmm. And, they didn't do anything as a result of it. And I didn't notice anything really changing. So I can't say that anything will be different, really. But I guess enough downgrades and everybody loses faith. So it is a reduction or diminution in the confidence in the government and accordingly the dollar.
And that's another change that we're noticing. We've seen BRICS come online, the consortium of other developing and non-developing Western countries. Is that really, how does that affect us using, or anybody using the dollar for that matter? Is it going to make our money less valuable? Is it going to give us less bargaining and purchasing power?
It's one of those things I'm not sure it means anything yet, but it could come to mean something. I think that the BRICS countries have been some of the worst performing economies in the world. And the idea that they're going to put together a purportedly gold-backed currency, and where's the gold kept? And it's a transnational currency. I don't know that they're going to be able to pull it off. And nobody trusts China now. China, you know, has just done some god-awful things, as the U.S., but even worse than the U.S. To my knowledge, we don't have any camps where they do forcible organ donations in the U.S. Maybe we do, but I haven't heard about it. But certainly in China, they do. And, you know, it's just, like I said, nobody trusts leaving money in a Chinese bank. The Chinese banks have been collapsing. The Chinese economy, supposedly the second largest economy in the world, Dr. George, mm-hmm. and they're just imploding before our very eyes. And then we see the infrastructure they built over the past 40 years is also crumbling before our very eyes. And then they've exported it in this Belt and Road Initiative, which has also been a dismal failure. So how they get together with Russia, who can't even defeat a third-rate or fourth-rate country in a war, and we could debate that war, you know, all day long, but the fact is sometimes you win by not losing, and, you know, Russia has been losing that war because they should have won it in 2 weeks. So how this group of countries is going to somehow sidestep the U.S. dollar, some bad things have to happen to the U.S. dollar for that to happen. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying in its present form, it's as much to preserve the currencies of that group of countries than it is to fight the dominance of the U.S. dollar. Like China's yuan has been slipping. They're in deflation. I mean, how that advances China, I'm not sure. They're going to have to create a new currency. It'll have to be gold-backed. So maybe in that respect, they get off to the races a little earlier. But eventually, we will have currencies backed by something, you know?
Does that also include the U.S. dollar, in your opinion?
Yeah, eventually it has to happen. Yeah, you know, no currency lasts forever. It's kind of like no empire lasts forever. And the currency eventually dies a natural death. And every leading country in the world has had the reserve currency and seen it slip away. So eventually it'll happen with the U.S., but it's not going to be because of the BRICS. It's going to be because of something far greater, more cataclysmic than that.
You know, when we think about this whole 3-year period with the contraction of private industry, you know, private small businesses, mom and pops, they took a real hit under the COVID lockdowns and the drying up of capital for lending and that sort of thing. Is there, well, it's a two-pronged question. Do you think that this was a bigger picture here in order to consolidate the wealth and power and make it more corporatized versus having it be what it is, where small businesses, I think, probably are the largest employer overall? Was there a movement, do you think, that maybe a little more cynical there?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, you go into your big box store and they sell the same things as the little box store, but the big box store is deemed essential and the little box store is deemed disposable. So it's not rational. That makes no sense whatsoever. Why is a Costco that sells a million different types of goods, flat screen TVs, they're essential, but a little electronics store around the corner isn't because they don't sell food? But what made the flat screens at Costco essential? No, this was, I don't like to get into conspiracies, but certainly there's something more here than meets the eye. That much I will say.
I think I would have to absolutely agree with that as a small business owner. And on the healthcare side of it, we've been seeing this for, you know, at least a decade, where when people graduated from medical school, they wanted to open their own practice. You know, that was a majority of the physician offices. And now it's down to maybe 30% of people who own their own practice and are not employed by a corporate hospital system. And if healthcare is any indication, and I think we can probably extrapolate the cost of healthcare has gone up because of consolidation, because it's, there's, I don't even know how to put it. There is no charge master. They just make up whatever charge they want. The insurance companies have aligned with the hospitals, with the pharmacies. It's become a real consortium where it's not transparent. Prices keep going up and there's no competition. If that's the game plan and they try to do a template on that on every single aspect of our society, this is not where people need to be, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. When you look at, you know, basically most doctors are employees of hospitals. And that was, when I was growing up, that was unheard of. Nobody wanted that, but they made the insurance reimbursement, the Medicare, everything so complicated, electronic digital records. Everything was aimed at consolidation because, look, the government at the end of the day would rather get one check than 5,000 checks. And they'd rather do one audit than 5,000 audits. And so to them, consolidation is good, even though it's completely inefficient. You have an incentive to stay open later, to take more patients. Right. The guy who's an employee of the hospital, he's there from 9 to 5, which is one of the selling points. And if he wants to leave at 4, he leaves at 4 and it's not feeling it in his pocket. And he goes on vacation and he still gets paid. So they've destroyed a lot of incentives to provide better than average care. And the doctor, if 20% of his or her patients drop off because they don't like the quality of service, it's too impersonal, he doesn't feel it, right? So it's destroyed incentives.
Well, if you were to take that and, again, apply that to the free market, to other sides of our economy, isn't that the same thing? I mean, how many times have you seen the big box stores have things need to be recalled and big corporations putting out a product that's substandard, but they just seem to get a pass and they get a slap on the wrist? It would put others out of business, but not these folks. And that goes throughout the system, whether it's any corporate system, whether it's healthcare, pharma, the automobile industry, et cetera. That reminds me of the electric cars. Mm-hmm. And they're having a great time with not selling. I mean, I think there's like a lot of inventory in these car dealerships. And I guess they took the bait on rebates and they can't sell them. So, I mean, it's not like it's better, everything that they offer us, but someone's getting paid and there's some incentive to put out crap and not have to pay a price.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a race to the bottom, standardization, uniformity, you lose something from that. But yeah, it's always the case the government would rather deal with fewer parties than more, easier to deal with. But as far as their rationale for it, I don't want to speculate on that, but I'm sure there's reasons for it that we aren't even aware of.
Well, on that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Kerry Lutz, and you can go to his website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, and you can also find his contact information. And on that site, you can listen to his podcast. He's got a wealth of information. And before the break, Kerry, we were trying to give an overview of the basic underpinnings of our economy and really our society at this point. And I think you're right. It seems to be being more centralized, where the power is being concentrated away from the individual, away from individual pursuits, to what is deemed, someone's deciding your importance, whether what you do matters. I really take offense to that because not everybody should be doing the same thing and they're not pursuing their talents. And ultimately, that just leads to a society that won't thrive down, the long run of it. We mentioned China and as an example in some instance, and it just seems that we're moving more towards that type of system where the government is the father, the mother, the business, everything is just has to be somehow aligned with that. And how can the economic system, because we're based on capitalism, right? At one point. I don't know if we still are.
Once upon a time, I think, Dr. George, we were, but I don't know. Command-based economy is kind of what we're talking about here, and it's definitely unsettling, to say the least, to see that the government really going out of its way to stifle business, and they find small business too annoying, too freewheeling, and let's just get rid of it. And hey, maybe that was part of what the lockdowns and everything were about. I don't know. I definitely think that there was no equity and small businesses basically got shafted.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me of the banking situation back in, 2016, mm-hmm. when the banks started to fail instead of giving everybody, in my opinion, if they'd given people grace and written their debt off instead of giving the money to the banks who never gave it back, you know, that kind of set the stage or the table, didn't it, for that power that the banking system had, where they were too big to fail. Whatever that, whoever made that statement up, I think it's really who's friends of, you know, the friends of are the ones who benefit and not anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's definitely the case. I could not agree with you more, and unfair. And you saw it during the lockdowns. You really saw it take place where these politicians would have these parties and nobody's wearing a mask. And then they're like busting people for not wearing masks, right? Did I imagine that?
Or going to church. Yeah.
Or going to church or whatever it was that they were after, right?
Right. And yeah, I wonder, the collective voice of the people, it's kind of shocking as from a U.S. American perspective, that people just went along with it. There was no fight. There was no questioning. Yeah. It just happened, which is kind of alarming because I have a feeling they're trying to revive this.
I think it's coming up next. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people are already mandating masks in certain schools and closing locations. And I'm a little bit dubious about where this is going in the next couple months.
Think they're going to pull this again, really?
It is election season.
I'll tell you who's not wearing a mask this time. I hardly wore it last time. Look, you're the doctor. You tell me, did the masks stop anything from spreading? I'd like to know if they did.
I would have to say no, especially viruses, which are much smaller. There was I don't know if it was YouTube or whatever, but somebody did an experiment where they smoked and they put a mask on and they blew the smoke out. I mean, if smoke can get through people, I think viruses can get through. Yeah. So you really have to start using some common sense and critical thinking skills and really listen to your own voice at this point, because everything that's been said really has borne out to not be quite what they said it was.
I couldn't agree with you more. On that score, we were lied to and sold a bill of goods, right? On a lot of stuff we can't get into too much of it because we don't want to get censored here, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course not.
But just put it this way, from your standpoint, have there been massive injuries that have taken place post-pandemic that we just can't seem to figure out how it happened?
Not from COVID itself, but been a lot of things that no one somehow can explain.
Yeah, and they're not even attempting to, right?
No, it's just like we're confused and we're confounded, but there's mm-hmm. no real honest conversation. And if there is, then people get somehow blacklisted and removed from the conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, truth is power. If we all need to be able to speak truth and not be censored. And if that's the case, I think everybody, and no matter what corner of the conversation they're in, should have a question about why can't somebody ask a question? Why can't we pursue? Because it's an unknown, right? This came out of the blue. It's an unknown. Everybody should be trying to pursue the truth, not hide it. And so that goes to everything. We're being distracted in a lot of ways. And one of the ways that I think that people get control is their health and their economics. You have to eat and you want your health. Those are the two things that are really the whole purpose of living, is to pursue and to have those two things, right? So that you can be free to live your life in a way that you deem a way that you want to live, right? Without hurting other people or encroaching on them. So from an economic standpoint and the small business aspect, I know that you've seen, I'm sure you get calls from people who are in extremis and they can't get a loan maybe, or they're have to downsize. What, on your end, what have you seen for people accessing your help? Is it the same problem that they've had before COVID, or are things different?
No, I think things are a little different now. I think, I think it's just like, it feels a bit out of control, I think, in general. And nobody, I think the level of trust out there is greatly diminished. And that people like you and I feel like we're more on our own, that that nobody's out there, nobody cares, the government. Now, you shouldn't be dependent upon government anyway, arguably. I agree with that. But let's face it, it just feels like it's every person for themselves now.
It does, actually. I would have to say that. But, you know, I'm an optimist, and I think always there's an opportunity if we withdraw our consent from this system. I think they want us to feel like we are powerless, that there's only one way to do it. And if you fail at this, then you have to depend on the largesse of the government. Yes. But in actuality, you're a small business owner who's turned the tide, who's turned the corner and thought outside the box and said, I'm going to depend on myself, and I'm going to use my skills, and I'm going to acquire new skills. Is that a mindset, do you think, that it, well, does it exist, or are we outliers?
I think that that many of you out there, it's really difficult because we haven't dealt with anything like this before.
True.
Let's go back to the Great Depression, and nobody knew what to do, you know? But you can always do things. I'm trying to help people myself, helping you, you know, for small businesses that are suffering, that aren't making profits, that are even suffering losses and maybe failing. I'm helping businesses now because I've done turnarounds myself for myself and other people. And the hardest thing in the world is when you're not making money, when your business is doing badly, to be happy, especially if it's your source of economic sustenance. And it's really hard. And your kids suffer, your family suffers, everybody suffers from this. So I've kind of made it my mission now to help any business out there that needs to do a turnaround. I'm there for them. And I want to be there for them. And I want to help you to realize that, yes, there are problems. Things go wrong in life. Stuff happens. But you're not totally at the mercy of the powers that be, or whatever the forces of nature out there, that you can do things to help improve your life and your business.
That, to me, that's one of the first things that people need to realize. What you just said is that there's somebody there for them. They're not alone. And then there's a path. And when you say helping people, is that in all, like healthcare or people who sell car? I mean, any business?
Yeah,
is that anybody can contact you?
Oh, absolutely. Any business. Look, if you're really down, and that means you stop paying your taxes, your withholding taxes and your sales taxes and all that, there's a limited amount that I can do for you. But short of that, and even if you're behind a little bit, I can help. But if you're behind, like you've stopped paying for the past year or years, forget it. There's like bankruptcy could well be your best opportunity. You need to talk to a lawyer ASAP. But anything short of that, and anything, you know, we can help you to increase your sales. And that's a longer term strategy generally, but sometimes we could do it right away. Instantly, we can increase your sales. Otherwise, the low-hanging fruit is often on the cost side of the income statement. And either way, I can pretty much review your business, review your financials, your statements, and within an hour, come up with three steps to identify, reduce, and generate profits. I can do that in an hour generally to 2 hours. But, you know, if I can visit your business, I could do it a little faster, but it's really not too hard to do for me. I've done it for myself, more importantly. And I just remember when I was a child, I was 10 years old, my father's business basically went bust due to some embezzlement by a relative. And, you know, when your children know what's going on, they know that things are bad. It might be your relationship between spouses is very tense and hostile because of the unfortunate events, or it just might be that they're scared. Your kids are scared that they're going to be homeless because they don't understand fully the whole picture. All they're getting is the fear aspect. And so if I could have had somebody reach out to my parents and say, look, and sit down with your kids even and say, look, this is temporary. You're going to work hard. Here's your plan. You know, here's what you're going to do. That would have like set my mind at ease and probably changed my life had I had somebody who's doing what I'm doing now. So you have to be totally transparent with your family, totally transparent with yourself. You have to totally get rid of the fear mindset, because that stops you from taking action. You can't take action when you're in fear, and usually all you can do is react. Fear is reactive. A threat is identified, and your body embraces a series of responses to respond to that threat. Proactivity is identifying the threat before it becomes a threat and neutralizing it, and taking steps so that the threat never becomes a threat. And so that's the most important thing. What I help you do is fix mindset. And that is the toughest thing to do, but it is the most powerful thing that you can do to turn your business around.
Wow. I mean, that puts you in a mindset of action as opposed to reaction. That just changes cortisol levels from a health perspective.
Right.
Your cortisol level, you sleep better, you can think clearly, yeah. And you're not depressed and basically waiting for a shoe to drop. That's a bad position to be in.
And it's serotonin levels,
yep.
And dopamine levels. So the dopamine is, here, I give you this step to do to cut this cost. You do it. Dopamine is your reward center. Serotonin, you do enough of those steps, and all of a sudden, serotonin kicks in, and you're calmer, and you're happier, and you feel more fulfilled. So just because you're not succeeding at your business now doesn't make you a failure. You're a failure if you have a plan that you can follow and turn things around and you don't do it, then you're a failure. But otherwise, you're not a failure until you accept or believe that you're a failure.
Wow. That's profound. And I think that's a great place to take our second break so people can chew on that for a second. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Kerry Lutz. And again, you can go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and contact him and also learn more about what he's offering. You know, Kerry, I love the fact that you're asking people to take their power back. That's what you just described. We just had a conversation prior in the first segment about the quality of services. I think there's a huge difference between a corporate-driven conveyor belt system versus somebody who has their skin in the game, their blood, sweat, and tears in creating the best organization, the best product, the best services that they can find. I know patients are now getting to learning that it's not the same going to a hospital setting versus going to a private doctor and actually seeing a doctor versus an ancillary part of the healthcare system. How do we get people to use that template in everything else? Because if people went outside of the corporate grid and actually started to spend their money with people who are in their communities, who are in the same small business, I try to spend with small business owners as much as I can, because I know how important that is. Imagine if 5% or 10% of what you did was based in that kind of commerce. Do you think that would make a difference in empowering us?
Huge difference. Huge, huge. And the reason, I think one of the problems is that most of you out there aren't even aware of the corporatization of the medical profession. You don't even know it's happening. So I think there's a movement of investing local, patronizing local businesses, right? For sure. But people don't know that that applies to the medical profession as much as it applies to any other industry or business, whether it's buying from a local convenience store, dry cleaner, pawn shop, whatever it might be. Pawn shop, bad example, but you know, whatever local business is around you, whether it's a boutique, a consignment store, people never think of buying local or non-corporate for their medical services, Dr. George. And you never think about that. I don't myself, but recently I went to an ENT and I was so happy they were independent. I was like shocked. I didn't know, but I mean, it's also a big practice. They have like 10 locations, but that's what they've had to do. But still, the doctor that I see there cares about, you know, my satisfaction with his services.
It's a big difference. You're looking in that patient's face. You're making the together. To me, it should be a team. And you know exactly how much money it is. I take the time, whereas I think the big corporate practices don't. I'm going to call your insurance company. I'm going to figure out what your out-of-pocket is before I do something. And you're going to decide whether or not you can afford it. I'm not going to just stick the bill to you. That makes a huge difference in terms of doctor-patient relationship, trust, and actually having the patient get good care, right? I've seen patients where they've just shell-shocked. You know, they come in, they're shocked that you're telling them how much it is before you do something. And you're not having to wait for weeks to see us because we don't see 1,000 people a day. We don't have to. So there's a different mindset. And I think the only pressure right now that we can really, I don't depend on any legislative pressure because I think that's completely compromised. But if you withdraw your consent in your pocketbook, that's really the only thing that makes these guys change their direction. You stop going, you stop feeding that trough, and all of a sudden they have to change in order to catch up with the consumer. I think that goes along with everything, don't you?
Sure. Well, how about a organization, a society for independent physicians who don't work for hospitals? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be a great thing? A trade organization that really helps, because you see it with certain other things where they will, advertise that they're independent and not part of a corporation, right? You do see it out there.
You do. Not enough in healthcare, though. And that would be the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons is the umbrella organization for independent doctors, which is counter to the AMA. But I don't think that people know as much. You know, it's not like it's on TV advertising.
It's a bad brand. They need to hire me to get their message out, because all you have to do is think about when you saw that hospital doctor, and now they're real clever. They take over practices, the hospitals, and then they build them a building, and it looks like they're still on their own, but they're not really, right?
No, not at all. And the sad part is, if you go, for example, to an ER, you can get a consultation from a specialist who's not even in your network, even though the hospital is. So people can be hit with bills.
Big bills.
Yeah. No one talks. They don't. Well, first of all, they don't know.
That's called balance billing, right?
No, that's actually different. That's if you don't have if the person is out, well, actually you're right. If the person's out of your network, they can charge the allowed, what they charge is what you have to pay. And they're not on a contract with an insurance company. That's a whole different conversation because the system is so inbred, that's the way to put it. I mean, they can charge 3 or 4 times, 10 times more for the same procedure, the same doctor visit, depending on whether the hospital is the owner of that practice versus an independent doctor. I would love to see a standardization of what is paid so that wherever you go, you're going to get paid as a physician the same thing as the hospital. That would change the dynamics because it's so skewed and they have such a monopoly on these contracts with these insurance companies that they can just give you the leftovers as an independent doctor. It just breeds this two-tier system.
Mm-hmm.
And the patients don't realize it, but they're victims of the system. It shouldn't cost you $30,000 to go into a hospital for a couple of days. And it just shouldn't, honestly. Hey,
you know how much my COVID hospitalization bill was 3 years ago?
I'm afraid to ask.
I was there for 6 days. It was $180,000. Now, I was using a health care cost sharing ministry who will go unnamed. And they paid them $18,000 and I never heard another word. I mean, I paid a few bills because I felt like these people saved my life. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but I felt like they were there for me. So I paid, you know, for the radiologist bill and part of the ER bill, you know, I paid maybe $500 out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And I guess they got the rest from the government.
Actually, you know what? They probably didn't because it's so inflated that they're billing you just ungodly sums of money for no reason. And they don't have to prove that it's for something. So there's something called it's like a surcharge. I forget the term for it now, but they can just charge. If you had a CT scan, right? They own the CT scan, but they can charge you a fee just for using the CT scan on top of the bill for having the scan and getting it read. So they're triple charging. And the one is just like completely made up.
What a scam.
There's nobody saying anything, but they want the freestanding radiology center who's doing the same thing. They don't charge a facility fee. That's what it's called. They're not charging a facility fee. And these guys want them out of business. So they've had the money to Pac-Man and buy out all of these smaller concerns, just like the doctors, they brought out labs, they brought out radiology centers. So the cost of our healthcare system, it becomes one-stop shop. They don't want competition.
There's two labs now, right?
Yeah, basically. And they charge what they want. But if you pay cash, this is the interesting thing.
Yeah.
You can bypass it. So just say, I'm going to pay you cash. This is how much I'm going to give you. Let's make a deal. You would be amazed how many huge hospital systems, radiology set, all owned by the hospital, will make a deal with you for the cash.
Oh, really?
That's how ridiculous it is. Is this really the cost? Or are you just doing it because you can?
All right. Well, you learn something new every day. You need to keep teaching people this because it's vital information. And you know what, Dr. George, your life can depend on it.
It absolutely can. And it's threaded through. I mean, I've been talking about the drug prescription plans and how much money they charge and pharmacy benefit management companies who have an internal deal.
Biggest scam ever.
Yeah. For certain meds, and they change it depending on the, you know, how the wind is blowing.
And CVS owns one of those too, right?
Well, it's like a top down. So Aetna is in bed with one of the the pharmacies. It's a preferred pharmacy. Well, that keeps you from being able to shop for the lowest cost, doesn't it?
Sure, of course.
So from a legal perspective, how does this work? Because if I did it, I'm not allowed to put my prices out because I can't tell another doctor what I'm charging because that's some sort of collusion, but these guys can do it 24/7. Again, the system is totally not right. So in my opinion, you can't win this game. You need to stop playing it.
Couldn't agree with you more.
On that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Carrie Lutz. And, you know, Carrie, we're having a really important conversation because we're saying things that people are thinking probably, but really don't know how to voice. And, you know, what you're doing for people who, this is what they live for. You know, they created something out of nothing. And it's just so demoralizing to have somebody decide that what you do isn't worthy. And I think instead of taking that on, I love the fact that you're teaching people how to fight back. And one, you mentioned something about, you've got, before the, we started our conversation, you have two things. Either you make more money or you cut your costs. It seems to me that these are universals, right? It doesn't matter mm-hmm. if you're a healthcare person or you have a construction company. What are some of the, I know that you're not going to get into major detail, but what are a couple of things that people, that you advise people to do to start cutting costs? I mean, you can get rid of employees, but I hope that's not our first choice most of the time.
Hey, you know what? In business, you tend to add costs without thinking about it, small business especially. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're getting a bunch of magazines that you don't need, or they could be gotten cheaper online. You get a paper copy of the Wall Street Journal, but the online subscription is a fraction of the cost. Maybe you've got 3 gigabyte per second internet and you only need 500 megs. You have to look at every single cost. Maybe you get water delivered, a water company, and maybe you should be filtering the water, all right? Or using Brita, you know, vessels to filter the water. Mm-hmm. There's just so many ways in which we waste money and you're not even aware of it. It could be that you're using, you know, one thing you should be reviewing yearly is your insurance. In Florida, like homeowners insurance, we don't have much choice because everybody stopped writing it here except the state. But, you know, car insurance, you know, you should be shopping that. And you should always get 3 prices from every potential, whatever you're doing, whatever you're bidding out. We get into habits and then the habits wind up working against us. Maybe buying stuff at a big box store is cheaper than buying stuff at business stores. Whatever you spend more than, you know, a couple percent of your total costs on, it needs to be subjected. Maybe your accountant has gotten too expensive. Maybe your attorney, if you use one, has gotten too expensive. And maybe you can cut back services there. I mean, it's just whatever cost you have, you always got to be looking to justify it. And to, it might be that, hey, it's worth using that same insurance agent, even if he doesn't get you the best deal because the claim handling is so much better. So you have to weigh costs and benefits, and then you have to take action. Maybe you're using vehicles that just cost too much money, and maybe you buy new vehicles and you could buy slightly used vehicles. Whatever the cost is, there's always ways to save on it. Look, if I said to you, Dr. George, I will pay you $1 million if you cut your costs by 10%, do you think you could do it?
You bet.
All right. So what's the problem? So do it, right?
Yeah.
Some of it's tough love. Some of it's common sense. I've been down this road a number of times, and I know how it's done. And you might have toxic employees. You might have relatives, but you're not running a social welfare program. So get rid of them. All right. Yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. But how much more painful is it going to be when you go out of business because you didn't control your costs?
Couldn't have said it better. I would add a little corollary to that. You mentioned health sharing ministries. Instead of maybe having a plan from the commercial insurance companies, that you investigate those health sharing ministries, because that's a much cheaper option for the employer as well as the employee, because the out-of-pocket usually is a fraction. You can have plans with $500 out-of-pocket for your employees. and you're paying a flat, premium for them. But mm-hmm. I'm seeing people coming in with $1,500, $2,000, $5,000 deductibles, $10,000 deductibles. They don't even use it because they can't afford it. But imagine if it were only $500 and then the health sharing company took over the rest. That's a real eye-opening change in the amount of money that you're spending. Plus, you're still able to give your employees health care, which is nice.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And I used them up until I qualified for Medicare. And then I just, you're kind of forced into doing certain things. You're making too much money. So you're paying for this stuff, whether you use it or not. So you might as well use it. And I guess Medicare is a whole nother story that I'm sure you could share a lot with us about. But, it's there. I paid for it my whole life. So what can I do?
I mean, as long as it's there, I don't know how long it's going to be there. That since the trust funds of various things are questionable, aren't they, at this point, like Social Security?
Yeah. And then, the distrust funds.
I mean, that's another aspect of a small business, your retirement. What type of strategies do you think people need to start looking at? Because, you can't really live on Social Security, but if most small businesses are pretty close to the bone in terms of having extra money that they're socking away, do you recommend any strategy to just slow and steady accumulate something that you can live on when you retire?
Oh, sure. Well, look, moving from a high tax state to a low tax state can be the best way to increase your savings rate with no effort whatsoever. That's a viable strategy, but we can't all just move and pick up, or nobody be left in these states now. If some type of forced savings where the money comes out of your paycheck or your business without you having to do anything to affirmatively act. And, that is the best way to do it. Individually, some of these roundup services, there's a thing called Acorns, and you can round up every charge in your accounts, 10 cents, and then put a set amount per month in there. And before you know it, you got like a bunch of money in that account. So forced transparent savings for those of us out there, including myself, who aren't the best at conventional, just putting money aside, is really the way to do it.
That's a good point. And it's not very painful because it's a little every day does add up. What about things like gold or silver? Is that worth it? What about keeping your money in the bank? Is that safe?
I am a definite believer in having precious metals exposure. When I started buying precious metals back in 1999, ounce of gold was $280. Now, today, let's just look at the price. I haven't looked at it in a while. And it's $1,937 an ounce. So we're looking at eightfold. Now, the stock market's gone up higher. But in any event, an ounce of silver, I was started buying $3 to $4 an ounce. Now it's almost $25 per ounce. It's gone as high as 50. So some metals exposure. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. If you like crypto, buy some crypto. I'm not a big proponent of it in the long term. I believe the government will shut it down. But in the meantime, it looks like it's been doing okay. So, but definitely, I like some precious metals exposure. You don't have to spend a lot to do it. You just got to do it regularly.
Mm-hmm. Little everyday kind of thing, or a little once a week or per paycheck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Forced savings. You buy a roll of pre-1965 dimes or quarters, whatever you can afford.
I think that's a good idea. What about now the banks? There have been a lot of stories about banks closing and the regional banks being in trouble. Should you limit how much you put in them? Should you move it to a credit union? How can you hedge against those bail-ins, mm-hmm. which possibly could happen?
You can't avoid the banking system, okay? Your money's there. It's not going to do you any good to put it into a whatever. It's just not going to... you know, basically the Federal Reserve has said they're going to protect the depositors. There's not enough money to do it. If we had a mass bank failure, the currency would probably go bust. So, you know, on that note, depending on what your preference is for banks or putting it in your mattress, it's probably not going to be much different, you know?
Got you. That just, you know, takes away a little bit of angst then. But mm-hmm. I mean, having some cash on hand, probably not a bad idea. If anything electric-wise goes down the grid, you're not going to be able to get money out of the bank. You can't use an ATM. You need to be aware of that as well, don't you?
Yeah, I think that's something to be concerned about, and could happen any day. Who knows? One day you go, you put your ATM card in the machine, and nothing happens. That will be a sad day for America and the world. But let's face it, it's a possibility, right?
It is. You have to prepare for everything. Again, I think it's part of your mantra. Don't live in fear. Prepare, right? Be aggressive about it. Now, we have a couple minutes left, but I want to make sure people know, because your resource and what you do is just, it's amazing. Tell people how they can contact you and, you know, use your services.
Sure. If you're a business that needs help, just send me an email, khl@kerrylutz.com. You can always go to my website, fill out the contact form. It's financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And yeah, that's it. My whole life's work is on that website.
You know, Kerry, I really love the fact that you're so resilient, you know, from your business, personally, you just inspire me because, I mean, if the system works the way it wants to, people would be demoralized and they would just give up and give in. And that's not how you live, and that's not what you do. And I think you're an inspiration, frankly.
Oh, well, I really appreciate your vote of confidence there. And hey, I try to help. And, you know, you can't let them get you down, because to me, the most important thing is treasuring each day of your life, because it's a declining resource. It's finite. It's going to run out one day. And you need to enjoy it while you have it, especially your health. And your health is a gift that, once gone, can seldom ever be replaced. So you need to treasure your health and every minute.
I couldn't have said it better. And that's a call to action. And I think it puts us in a different mindset, where you can have those endorphins and the dopamine and all these other things that are positive supersede and override this overwhelming, well, they would like it to be an overwhelming system of, you know, lack. And I think it's about abundance. And I love the fact that I can have you come on the show, and I'd love to have you back anytime you want to come on.
Hey, well, it's always a pleasure and an honor. I really appreciate the work that you're doing, really explaining how you take control of your health care. And hey, what more can you say? Just keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. And you too. I want to thank you for joining me, and I want to thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.